And we're back live on your number one sports podcast, All Things Sports. A week into the MLB season, the Houston Texans are digging for gold. The Marlins are playing blackjack with no aces, and we're back to give you the real in sports. I'm a small town EP, Wade Julian, Big Kev shot it with me here. Biggest news out of the NFL in the last 48 hours, Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans. He'll be accompanying the likes of CJ Stroud, Tank Dell, head coach D'Amico Ryan. June, how big of a power move did Houston just make with this acquisition?
Yeah, I mean, this is a splash for sure. I don't think it's one of those deals that it would have been as big on any other team. But Houston being in a position they're in, you know, having a young quarterback, finding him a true number one wide receiver, you know, with all the confidence in the world, adding that to a wide receiving core, like you just mentioned, guys like Tank Dell, who's going to be coming back from injury, who was really exciting before he got hurt, and Nico Collins, who kind of proved himself as a number one wide receiver last year. This is going to be a scary, you know, trio. We talked about the Bengals with Jamar Chase, Boyd, and Higgins. Obviously, Boyd is still a free agent there, and Higgins wants to be moved, so we're going to have to see about that. But this is about Houston right now, and for them to only have to give up a second-round pick for next year's draft to get their quarterback some help, they've already added, you know, some pieces to that defense as well during free agency, and Joe Mixon in the backfield. So this is a splash for their offense right here. It's a confidence booster for the team in general. And it's also like one of those exciting blockbuster trades for the city. I would like to hear Kev's thoughts on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, a great trade for Houston. I think we see what Stephon Diggs did for Josh Allen in Allen's third year and on, after being just not that good his first 2 years, historically inaccurate. So a guy like Stephon Diggs comes in, and now his completion percentage shoots up, you know, above 63% every year since then. And so I think for CJ Stroud, who looks as good as he did last year, to now get a guy like Stephon Diggs just makes that team. And we talked about it with Atlanta, how Atlanta's kind of doing it the reverse way, right? With paying and having all the other guys on rookie contracts. And this is kind of this the more traditional way to do it. You got a really good quarterback on a rookie scale deal, get the guys around him early, and build that core, like just like Kansas City did with Mahomes. Build the culture around it, and the guys will start to come when you have to pay your quarterback eventually.
Yeah, and speaking of like that financial, you know, part of it, they actually wiped out the final 3 years of his deal, so they're making him a free agent going into this or next year. They took the 3.5 guaranteed mil for next season, moved it up to this season, gave him a raise to 22.5 million. But obviously they're going to want him to play on a contract year type level, and he's going to try to play hard to go get another deal after this one. So, I mean, kudos to the Texans for one, you know, doing right by him, giving him a raise now, but also, you know, kind of giving him an opportunity to sign another deal and prove it. Not to say he's unproven by any means, but, you know, we talk about older wide receivers or veteran players in this league and them trying to get a deal, you know, after they've already got paid. So credit to Stephon Diggs for still being a marquee target in this league. Not to say he's like super old, but he is a veteran in this league. And again, I think that there is that narrative on them. So, but I think he still has a lot left in the tank. I do want to talk about though, my fault, Kev, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say to that point on Stephon Diggs, I've seen a lot of people saying he's kind of past his prime, which he's not 27 anymore, right? But he's still a guy that's going to go out and get you over 100 catches and over 1,100 yards and, you know, 8-plus touchdowns. So that guy is your number one. I'll take that every day.
Go ahead.
Great, obviously great, like you guys were saying, great move for CJ Stroud and the rest of the wide receiver core. I mean, the Houston Texans as an organization, you build around CJ Stroud. This is definitely a piece where he should eat. He should definitely eat. I like the comparison that Kev made with Pat Mahomes and how, you know, the Chiefs kind of just threw everything into the, you know, they went all in, as everybody's saying these days, while Mahomes was still on his rookie contract. And then, the, you know, all the pieces just kind of started to come in gradually. And, you know, now the, you know, dynasty is here. I do think that this move, you know, could get Houston to the AFC championship at this point, you know, based on their production last season and, you know, the addition. Now, let me get to Diggs now, right? To me, it's almost like a hit or miss, because, and I hate to be that person, but it didn't work out for you in Minnesota. There was obviously, I think that this move proved that there was some type of, you know, friction between you, Diggs, Josh Allen, and the Buffalo Bills organization. When the Bills went on that run last year, he wasn't touching the ball. They were 7-2 when he got less than 10 receptions or 10 targets. Not receptions, 10 targets in those last 9 games. In those first 6 games, when he had more than 10 targets, they were 4-4. So the rift could have been something that was factual, something that the organization was seeing. Like, look, we get you the ball more, we don't win. We get you the ball less, we do win. Maybe we don't need you here anymore. Now, I'd piggyback back to the didn't work for you in Minnesota, didn't work for you in Buffalo. If it doesn't work for you in Houston, the other, you know, it wasn't Minnesota and it wasn't Buffalo at that point. June, I'll kick it back to you.
I mean, I think you make a fair point. Like, numbers speak for themselves at the end of the day, but if you do want to look at it in that aspect, you do also have to look at it in what he's done producing wise. I can't necessarily go and blame Stephon Diggs for getting all the targets he does, putting up the numbers he does, and the team not being able to come out with a win. It is a team game, and I'm not trying to, like, invalidate your point, because, you know, we see it all the time in basketball with usage. Like, it's a usage thing, right? However, you know, to even say, like, it didn't work out in Minnesota, it might be, in my opinion, a bit of a stretch, because I think that Stephon Diggs made his name in Minnesota. They obviously traded him and kept Thielen, for better or for worse, and still didn't find the success they'd been looking for. And then Stephon Diggs comes to Buffalo, and not to say that they weren't who they were before they ever met a Stephon Diggs, but I do think he helped put the offense over a bit of a hump. And he's known as a top five receiver in this league since, you know, probably his Minnesota days, late Minnesota days. So I think Diggs has done a good job. But I do respect the fact that, you know, there are points and arguments to be made about a rift and uncomfortableness and, you know, him being that big personality wide receiver that we're used to seeing that kind of gets into that emotional drama with his quarterback.
Yeah. And I think, just speaking on his quarterback, this is the year for Josh Allen to show that he is that guy, right? Like, at this point, people are saying it's between the Jets and the Dolphins in the
He's AFC. Not.
So far he's not shown that without Stephon Diggs that he can be. And now he doesn't have Stephon Diggs, he doesn't have Gabe Davis. His number one, I think, is Curtis Samuel right now. So it's time for him to show that he's that guy, or Buffalo may be looking at a mistake. The other side, really quick, is the fact that this could have been Justin Jefferson, based on the pick that they traded away for Stephon Diggs. So could have had.
Would they have drafted him? I mean,
maybe not. But it's just, that's who Minnesota drafted.
But I get it. I get it.
So. It's going to be interesting to see CJ Stroud and Stephon Diggs connect, and what D'Amico Ryan can do. What's up, June?
One more point is, as much as this is a big thing for Houston, as a Colts fan, it kind of has me like Squidward in SpongeBob, you know, looking out the window when everybody's having fun and L'Jarius Sneed's getting traded to Tennessee, signing one of the bigger deals for a cornerback in NFL history. You got CJ Stroud getting weapons like Joe Mixon, Stephon Diggs. The Jaguars, they added a wide receiver, if I'm not mistaken. I forgot who they added, but I know they did something this offseason.
Tennessee added a wide receiver too, I believe.
Calvin Ridley went to Tennessee.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
So everybody's doing something. And it kind of makes me wonder and question the general manager that is Chris Ballard in Indianapolis. But ever since 2017, I've stuck beside him, you know, tried to see things from his point of view. He's proved me wrong at times. There have been times where I question him, like our cornerback room right now. But, you know, I think things – he's very patient. He's very – things will take time and play out as they should. And it hasn't always happened. This playoff – not to make this a Colts podcast, but, you know, we didn't get the expected season – from last year, whether our quarterback went down or not, we, you know, had the opportunity and it didn't go our way. And we didn't see too much change. So I don't know if it's him just having the belief that if Anthony Richardson does come back, or when he comes back, cause he will, if we have enough, you know, Houston, cause DP mentioned he could see them going to the AFC Championship. And when I heard that, I'm like, okay, it's a fair statement. When you break it down, you know, CJ Stroud had a hell of a rookie year, right? For him to duplicate that, not saying he can't, not saying he will, but it's going to take a lot. He has the pieces to do it. They're trending in the right direction. However, their division has gotten better. And the Colts, in a game where they could have won in advance and went to the playoffs and sent Houston home with their backup quarterback, who was a Pro Bowler last year, shout out to Gardner Minshew. Anthony Richardson, you know, is 1-0 against those Texans. So it's a lot. It's a lot. You know, it's a lot. And I'm very excited to see AFC South football this year. And I would love to see Indianapolis beat Jacksonville on the road. Like, please, God.
Your team's got a thing for running it back.
I think
Heat. Colts in the Heat.
Hey, I think Shane Steichen got you guys right where you guys need to be, June. I think you guys will be A-okay this year. A-okay. Gentlemen, we have made it to the Final Four. Heartbreak weekend, if I may. NC State will take on Purdue. Alabama will take on top-ranked UConn. Purdue also a number one seed. Kev, which of the number one seeds is most likely to fall?
I mean, if you ask me which one is most likely, I would say Purdue, which is surprising because they've got NC State, but I just think we talked about it last time I was on. I think UConn has just looked like head and shoulders above everybody to this point. And I don't really see them as the defending champions slowing down at this point. You know, they have been here. They know what the final goal is, and they know that getting to the Final Four is not enough. So I would expect UConn to come out and dominate Alabama. So I think if anybody's going to have trouble, NC State's obviously been playing great basketball since the ACC tournament. It's been 9 games now that they've won in a row since the terrible ending to the regular season. And so, yeah, NC State's got the momentum. They've been playing good basketball. So, yeah, if anybody, I think it's going to be Purdue.
So, Kev, would you say that Purdue minus 9.5 is too many points?
I think so. Like DJ Burns versus Zach Edey is going to be an interesting matchup. Like, Edey has the height, but Burns is not going to, like, you're not going to be able to bully him. And if you can, then more power to you. But I think NC State can make this a scrappy game, and I think that they can cover. I don't think it's going to be a double digit game.
June, what do you think?
I agree with Kev as far as going back to the original question, which is the number one seed more likely to be knocked off. I do believe it's Purdue, you know, and it's no slight to anybody on that team, starting with Zach Edey, right? We go back to the 40 and 15. But this UConn team, it's like they look like the UConn women's team of 2010, right? Like, they're not losing, and they're winning by a large margin. And to be honest, we could see this for another year or so. Like, obviously, they have two guys, or at least two guys, going to the NBA draft. But this team, they do it the right way. I'm going to come on here and say this every time. They do it the right way. They're coached well. They play as a unit. And It's very similar to how, you know, a pro basketball team should play. And in a you know, they don't have an NBA style per se, but as far as execution and getting things done like they've been here before. It's funny, Kev was saying UConn knows what the Final Four is going to be. And I thought he was going to say UConn knows what the fuck's going on. And I was like, oh. All right. But it went totally another way. But yeah, UConn to me, especially playing a team who's in their first Final Four, right? Alabama's never been here before. That's going to be so much pressure. They're going to have so much anxiety. At the end of the day, they're young people who feel and have emotions just like we do, right? And if we get rallied for big games, UConn's been here and done this. And I do believe experience matters in sports, especially in high-pressure situations and environments. That might also be the downfall to the number one seed Purdue with Zach Edey having the expectations he does, wondering, is this going to be his last game before, you know, the NBA draft? And is this going to be the last thing he leaves on tape? You know, will it be good? Will it be bad? And it's just a lot weighing on a lot of these kids. And so you're going to either, you know, stand up to the moment or let it consume you. Not to say Edey could have a good game and, you know, they still lose. But I like NC State in this one. I'm not going to lie, just based on what they've shown. And I like NC State to win in a sense that I want them, I should say. I do think Purdue comes out victorious, though.
But hold on. Why do you want NC State to win?
Because I respect the run. See what you did there. Yes, I can say they are Cinderella. And if they get to the final, to the, you know, championship, I will be rooting for UConn to beat them by 40, being as though they are a Cinderella team and should not be there. Yeah.
Donovan Klingon was on Unsportsmanlike this week. Shout out to ESPN Radio. And he was asked about what's next for him, if he's going to enter the draft or not, what's he thinking. He obviously gave the real PC answer, said he was just enjoying the moment, having fun. He loves the University of Connecticut. You know, everything you're supposed to say, everything that they prepped you for in case you were asked that. Mm-hmm. You know? Now, when you really look at it, I'm going to go ahead and say, I think UConn does repeat this year. And like you were saying, June, we could see this for another couple years. Now, when you're a guy like Donovan Klingon and you see the possibility of doing something that's never been done before and three-peating as national champions next year, June, should Klingon come back for another year?
He should go Breonna Stewart on them boys, man. I ain't gonna lie, yo. That would be pretty fire. Just win a championship every year you play in college. Let's be honest. His draft stock isn't the highest, right? He's a 7'2 guy, 280. It's a big dude. And does he fit the modern NBA style necessarily? Do I see him being able to go up against guys like Wembanyama, Embiid, Jokic on a nightly basis, Chet Holmgren? I mean, I could be wrong. And hey, but that might be all the difference in him staying one or two more years. You know what I'm saying? And being under this environment where he's comfortable and winning, right? Winning culture really, really prepares you for the next level, I think. So, yeah, stay and go Stewie on them, boys.
Kev, what do you think? Does his draft stock go down if they don't three-peat and he stays?
I mean, I really think it depends on his play. You win two national championships, especially back-to-back, and, you know, you come back and you get to the Final Four again and just fall short, but you're the best. You're clearly, like, one of the top five players in the nation. I think your draft stock probably goes up at that point a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't even know anymore. Like, you see guys like Chet look like they're not going to do anything. Wemby is like a twig, but he's just like an alien at the same time. So he's Groot, you know?
I could have it all wrong. I could.
Yeah, I think it's a great question because I really don't have an answer for the question either. I was hoping you guys would maybe sway my thoughts, but I really don't know because to June's point, do I see him being able to go up against, you know, these grown ass men that are in the NBA right now on a night in and night out basis? It's hard to say right now. Again, 7'2", 280. I mean, it's tough. It's tough. It's tough. But I guess we'll see. We got to get through this weekend first.
He's not a great shooter either. So it's not like he's got that really in his game right now. So, I mean, you know, it's something to think about. I think about staying, especially if you repeat, maybe go for the three-peat.
If you're having fun and you love the university, you know, I'm enjoying the moment. I might three-peat too.
I mean, he might make more money next year in college if he repeats this year than going to the NBA. So,
yeah. Facts. His stock will definitely rise too, because think about, you know, next year. I mean, next year's class, that's a whole other ballpark. But yeah,
let's kick it over to the women's side of it. The men's side will be played in Glendale, Arizona. The women's side of it will be played at Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland, Ohio. And this women's tournament is very interesting because, you know, you have the Caitlin Clark, you know, kind of headlines. You have the Angel Reese and Flaw J headlines. But you have this top-ranked South Carolina team that's on this undefeated run that nobody is talking about right now. They will face number 3, North Carolina State. And number 3, UConn in the women's will face number 1, Iowa, Caitlin Clark and company. Kev, what do you think is the reason as far as South Carolina just not really being talked about and all the headlines being elsewhere right now when they're on this undefeated run and could possibly also go back-to-back?
I mean, yeah, it's just they don't have a Caitlin Clark or a Angel Reese or a Paige Beckers on their team right now. They're a great team, and obviously, you know, they're undefeated, and they do have drawn a blank. Her name starts with a K. But can't think
the Brazilian girl. I know you're talking about.
Yes, and they've got a really good team. Obviously, 36-0. Like, there's nothing to, you know, just gloss over. But I just think Caitlin Clark is, and that Caitlin Clark Angel Reese game, and now you're getting Caitlin Clark versus Paige Beckers, and South Carolina hasn't really had that marquee game yet, and they've also just been blowing people out, kind of like UConn was on the men's side. So it hasn't really been a lot of competition, although they did almost give up a 17 point lead in their last game. So
yeah, and by the way, respectfully, Camila Cardoso. So I agree with Kev. It's like, what have we seen as far as women's basketball being talked about on our timelines, on our Instagrams, on ESPN? It's been how exciting it is and how, you know, much star power we're getting with, you know, shout out to Angel Reese, took a tough loss in the Elite Eight. Caitlin Clark played amazing basketball in the Elite Eight. And as which did Angel Reese, however, you know, again, took that tough loss. Caitlin Clark willed the team to the win and was unguardable at points of the game. And Paige Beckers, we talked about her and Juju going into that game while we were watching the game, or it was actually right before the game because we were watching the Caitlin Clark Iowa versus the LSU led by Angel Reese. But Paige Beckers went and showed out right in front of everybody, did as we thought she would. And shout out to Juju. Juju had a good game as well. But I think Paige Beckers is really on a mission right now. She's really on a mission. Now, this is about South Carolina. Yeah, to Kev's point, you know, it's been easy work. And not to say 36-0 is easy, but they make it look easy. And so, you know, it's a little vanilla. It's hard to say that. I can't even say it straight up, because to think 36-0, coach of the year, Dawn Staley, you know, shout out to her.
Facts.
It's just going right over our heads. But hey, when you got a person like Stephen Curry, when you got a person like Caitlin Clark, it's just too polarizing, right? And everybody's attention just shifts, and it's like, yeah, we know South Carolina's goddamn good. They've been goddamn good. They probably gonna win it. They're my pick, but you know, that's more of it. It's nothing against them, you know, personally. It's nothing against them as far as like what their culture is. You know that people kind of take shots at LSU for whatever reason they do and their coach. There's no drama over there. They just win basketball. That's all they do. And they've done this for the last 5 years.
Earlier today, it was reported that Haley Van Lith is entering the transfer portal. June, you putting anything about you? Is it you think there's any backstory behind her once again leaving a university and, you know, entering the transfer portal?
I'm not too sure what it is. You know, I there's a lot of pressure to play for that team right there, and I don't know. Maybe she just needs to be more comfortable in another environment, and that's fine. You know, that's fine. I don't have too much judgment on it. I think that, listen, not everybody is able to stay at the school they once signed up for, and I've seen it with players I rooted for on the Miami Hurricanes. Shout out to Mark Pope. You know what I'm saying? Like, it happens, and when you have these situations, what I like to do, because at the end of the day, this is not a grown man or grown woman making millions of dollars, you know, and if she is, you know, making money with her NIL deals, more power to her. I love that. However, I'm not going to go out and clown a college basketball player, you know, like for performance. You know, if you're doing something irresponsible and, you know, you deserve to be the donkey of the day, we're going to talk about it. But a college 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old that's not making money playing for a school trying to find the best path to their successful career, I mean, what's the point of putting the magnifying glass on Haley Van Lith for the rest of her college career in a negative light to try to see if she succeeds or not? Like, let her find her way. Like, she could be a four, you know, I'm saying, play all 4 years and finally find a, you know what I'm saying? So we just, and it's much like to our point, we were just talking about Brett from UConn, you know what I'm saying? So to that same breath, why, you know, his draft stock, what did I say? His draft stock could plummet, you know, it could go down. I don't know that he's ready to guard Vint Wembanyama and guys like that. I didn't say, well, he's not good enough. Like, he sucks. Like, no, it's not about that. These kids are trying to figure it out. And so, I think we should just let it play out. You know what I'm saying? Let Haley Van Lith find her groove. And she's a hooper. We know she could ball. It's not about her talent. She has talent, but there's a little more to, you know, things, and politics are a thing. So hopefully she figures it out. And if she don't, she don't.
And if she doesn't, she doesn't. I just thought it was a little interesting with Andrew Reese declaring for the draft, and then I'm thinking, oh, here it is. Haley Van Lith is about to, you know, she's about to be the center. Spotlight is on you. And then transfer portal. Kev, you got any thoughts on it before we move on?
Yeah, man, this NIL stuff is crazy. I feel like that's part of the reason now people just jump in the transfer portal. What can I get out of an NIL at another school? Maybe I can make more money there. So I don't know. That's, to me, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, to me, that's probably a part of it, especially with as many people as we see going through a transfer portal now year after year. So I think that has something to do with it, but also probably just looking for another opportunity to play elsewhere. Like, there's a lot of expectations for this team this year coming off the championship and then adding Haley, and then obviously she's not playing as aggressively on offense as she was at Louisville, where she was the number one option. She was like the third option here, so that's tough when you're used to being a scorer and you don't have the ball. You have the ball in your hands a little bit, but not as much as you're used to, and not the freedom that you used to play with. So I'm sure that probably has something to do with it too, and probably didn't hurt the way she played based on her expectations. Probably didn't go over well in Louisiana, and you know, maybe she's just ready for her final year of eligibility to be elsewhere.
The final boss, as they say. Whew. Like I said, man, we're a week into the MLB. The Yankees are on top of the AL East, 7 games into the season with a game on the Boston Red Sox. These teams won't see each other until June, twice in July, once in September. Kev, what should we expect from both of these teams between now and when they first meet in June?
I mean, my hope is that it's more of the same, right? Because there's nothing better in baseball than when the Red Sox and Yankees are both good and you can get a real rivalry out of it, which I feel like we haven't had since like Jason Varitek was playing baseball. So
that guy still gives me nightmares on certain nights.
Right. So and fucking Tim Wakefield's knuckleball.
Ugh. Facts. Rest in peace, Tim.
Yes. Rest in peace. So yeah, hopefully we get more of the same. Just good baseball from both teams, and hopefully they can both be in one of those positions like they were back in the day, where it was just those two were the two in the American League. You knew it was going to come down to who was better between the Red Sox and the Yankees. And I think that's when baseball is at its best.
Definitely.
The Red Sox 4-game win streak, Yankees 1-game win streak. June, what have you seen from the Sox in these, in, you know, 5-2 in the last 7 games that you're really enjoying?
I mean, first and foremost, I feel like it's night and day from last year. Just energy shift, you know, like I think guys being more comfortable in what their role is, seeing what this team is and what it's going to be. Some veterans off the team now. It's a younger squad, high energy. But, you know, starts with Rafi Devers is playing pretty well. Jaron Duran has really surprised me. He had a 4-hit game in Oakland where we swept the A's, and we played the A's twice. You know, we had 2 series versus the A's, so I'm sure that has to do with the hot start. And I'm going to give credit where it's due. I mean, if you're coming off a spring break and you're winning the games you're supposed to, hey, you know, that's all we could ask. Nick Pivetta has started really good this season, so if he can continue, you know, just his strong outs, we're going to be okay. Obviously, it's 7 games, right? We're not going to get in over our heads. We would like to see this on a consistent basis. I would like to revisit how the Red Sox are doing after 3 weeks of baseball. You know, we play a good 20 to 25 games. But all signs are pointing up right now as far as what we could look forward to and what this team could be. And the main thing I think that this team is going to be is, like, fun. Last year was not fun to watch. It was a long, dreadful season where we understood what we were going to have once the season started. This season, you know, we could be at the bottom of the AL East. We could be in the middle of it. I don't believe this team wins it. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you they're going to be at the top of it. But if we see a competing Red Sox team, as Kev said, when the Red Sox are good, and the Yankees have been good, so that's not, you know, their issue. They're holding up their end of the bargain. They've got later down the line issues in you know, September, October time. But if the Red Sox can compete all through the summer, that's when baseball is really fun too. You know, get the Yankees and Red Sox. So credit to them, man. 5-2, Alex Cora's got them feeling good, and I'm proud to see what we've been able to do so far.
Yeah, definitely playing the A's in the series does not hurt the record. I think a big thing for the Red Sox too is Trevor Story's back. So
yeah, Trevor Story's playing good too.
Facts. We'll take it over to the NL real quick and to a hometown team of ours. We may not be fans, but the Marlins are the only winless team in the MLB. They are 8 games into the season. They got an extra little, you know, little kick to them. And they might have been down when they got kicked, for that matter. They did play St. Louis today, and we're winning after 5. And I know this because I had St. Louis first 5. And it was just in a little parlay, nothing crazy, because I'll tell you what, I also put a nice little chunk of change on the full game money line on St. Louis because the Marlins bullpen is terrible. Tell you what, in the 8th inning, they had 4 pitchers come in after their starter, and only one of them did not give up any runs. Wild. Wild, wild, wild. They did end up losing the game, cashing my full game money line ticket. Shout out to the Marlins. But like I said earlier, Sandy Alcantara is out. They got, I think, like 3 or 4 other people that are out. 2 of them are out for the season. Yeah, Yuri's out. They're playing blackjack with no aces right now. And the deck is getting very scary. Very scary. And even Sandy last year, he looked like a shell of himself from the previous season. And then once you see that he's having Tommy John series out for the season, to me, it looked like he was playing injured, you know, for most of that season last year, but that's neither here nor there. Kev, what did they need to do to right the ship to get their first win? I mean, or matter of fact, if you look at their schedule, when do they get their first win? Because they got to get at least one. It's a 162 game season.
I think they who's pitching tomorrow? Before I say this, because I just feel like tomorrow's the day. Yeah, I think they can get a win tomorrow with Trevor Rogers on the mound. Their bullpen's terrible though. Like they've had a lead in think at least five of these eight games.
Mm-hmm.
Like not just a lead early, like a lead past the fifth inning. I went to opening day, got there in the sixth inning because that place is a mess. And it was 5-2 Marlins. And they end up losing the game in extra innings. So, like, they put runs on the board early, and then the bats go quiet. And then they bring in the bullpen, and everything blows up. So, what do they need to do? Probably sell the team again. I've decided that. I'm a Yankee fan, but I have the Marlins have a place in my heart. Me and my dad used to have season tickets and go all the time. Luis Castillo is my favorite baseball player probably ever.
Shout out to Luis Castillo, man.
I love Luis Castillo. And Juan Pierre Luis Castillo was elite.
Juan Pierre was my first elite favorite 1-2. Player. I'm not going to hold you.
The most elite 1-2 batting order. Yeah,
you're getting first and second base off of it.
Probably first and third.
Yeah.
Just because of speed. But so the Marlins have a special place in my heart. The day that I have enough money, I'm buying the Marlins, and I'm treating them like a proper baseball team.
Like they deserve. I think just to kind of go off Kev, they're not executing. It's not a thing of like they're not trying. There's like bad energy. I feel like they're trying, and you know, they have leads in these games. They play well at points, but just can't seem to, you know, close out a game and stay the course. I was reading earlier up on some numbers, and I saw that they're hitting a 51% ground ball rate, right? And they're hitting .237 with runners in scoring position. And, you know, their walk to strike ratio is not anywhere near where they need to be, and that's that bullpen. But their starters aren't even, you know, their starters aren't playing horrible or as bad as their bullpen, but they're not getting the production they would like from their starters. Now losing another starter today to, you know, Tommy John, it's just like when it rains, it pours. And, you know, it's going to pour more. I know it's spring, but, you know, in the summertime, it really starts to rain. Facts. So it's going to pour more. But Skip Shoemaker in his second year, this is odd territory right here, because there was a promising upside. This is the first team in MLB history to make the playoffs the previous year and then go 0-7 to start a season. Something's going to have to give, and a statement will be had to made if they make this a 10-game stretch to start a season. What are we looking at? You know what I'm saying? Who's to blame here, and what's the big uproar shakeup in the clubhouse? So I'm going to look and monitor this one closely, as they say. We're going to monitor this one. And we got to figure out what's going to change in Miami for them to be able to, like they said, that they're going to let the fans bring in flags and fucking horns and cowbells and shit. It's not helping.
Oh, man. Hey, and I do want to give a shout out to Jake Berger, because he returned home today. He is a St. Louis, Missouri native. Saw the plate four times, was walked twice, and homered twice at his crib. How exciting that must have been for him. And
it sucks how bad the Marlins are, because he's been so good to start the season.
Consistent. Jazz Chisholm balled today. I was reading up on some stats earlier. His bunt ratio and percentage of success is 66%. Every time he puts the bat down to bunt the ball, he gets on base 2 out of 3 times. I mean, what else can you ask for? Shout out to Jazz Chisholm. I do want to give a very happy birthday shout out to Martin Perez, former Texas Ranger world champion. Now he's over in Pittsburgh, took care of business today against the Nationals. He did go 6.2 innings, let go 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 6 Ks, and a home run. I said it last week. Josiah Gray started for the Nationals, and he was still fadeable today. 4.1 innings, 7 hits, 6 earned runs, 3 Ks, 3 rocks. Just atrocious. Don't know what you're doing, Josiah Gray, but keep doing it because it's filling the pockets up. You heard? Very happy birthday to Martin Perez. One of my favorite left-hand pitchers, I'm not going to lie to you. I very much so enjoy watching him pitch. You guys have any more MLB takes before we keep it going?
Yeah, I wanted to shout out to the chat, my boy Tay. Shout out to Tay in the chat, man. We appreciate you showing love. Oakland, man. This Oakland A's, we spoke about them and them being a favorable matchup on your schedule. Whenever you see the A's, expect a win or a few or a sweep, get a broom. But this is about location. We know that they're moving to Las Vegas. We don't know when, but we know they're doing it, and it's going to be
years.
You're right. This is what they want.
The fans want it. The fans are boycotting their games right now, but continue to.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Nah, you're good, because they're getting – they had, you know, at points 3,000 to 4,000, 5,000 fans at a game in a Coliseum. Facts. They are relocating to their AAA affiliate in Sacramento. This is a 14,000 attendance park that's including the standing area. They said that they had about 13,500 fans at opening day. So I guess that's the number they kind of were comfortable with. And I think as far as like – for a franchise to go from their pro stadium to their minor league stadium is just a whole craziness in one, because
nasty work.
You know, the fact that things are being run the way they are and fans are feeling the way they do toward the organization and the front office and the ownership, it's sour, right? And nobody wants to see that. But on the flip side, I do think this is an experience that the fans would definitely appreciate. Being able to just see your favorite MLB players that come through Sacramento on a trip, you know, as a baseball fan, I, within the next 4 years, wouldn't mind taking a trip to Sacramento, Bay Area, and not to say Sacramento's Bay Area, but I'm saying maybe stay in the Bay Area, visit Sacramento, and go to one of these minor league stadium games holding professional baseball teams. Like, this seems pretty cool. But
that's like Luton Town in the EPL right now.
You know, and it's like, yeah, bro, Luton Town vibes, bro. And it's very unserious, you know, if you will. So much like, you know, they did the Cornfield Summer Baseball Classic or whatever. This is like one of those like game modes on MLB The Show where you kind of like select a random stadium and you just ended up here at this. I keep wanting to say Little League. I don't mean to, but my brain is going Little League. But I'm trying to say minor league. However, they are going to try to regulate it to MLB standards. They're going to add some renovations. I'm not sure exactly what. I know I heard new clubhouse, but I'm sure the field will have to be touched up as well. Oh, LED lights were another thing that they have to add to the stadium. So it's just pretty crazy to see where we're at with a franchise in the MLB.
Yo, my high school baseball team, We have no lights, bro. So once the sun went down, they would just call the game. Like, yo, we're going to stop here.
That's crazy.
Okay, what do you want to say?
I just want to talk about how bad this is. First of all, they're not even using their own AAA affiliate team. It's the San Francisco Giants affiliate that they have to use in Sacramento. Second of all, what free agent is going to sign with are they the Oakland A's? Are they the Sacramento A's? I don't even know. Like, what are we calling them?
Yeah, the MLB A's team?
This is so minor league team. So disrespectful to every major league baseball player who's going to play in that stadium, and they're worried about flipping bats. Get out of here. Stop. I hate baseball right now. Baseball is so annoying right now. And this is like the top of the list for me. It's terrible.
I feel that, bro. I feel it. I feel it through the computer screen right now. Kevin's up to here with it.
I'm worried about guys flipping bats on home runs. How about we worry about getting Oakland or Sacramento or Vegas? Or how about we find them a home? They're like the adopted child nobody wants. the Vegas mayor's like, no, no, Oakland, just keep them. Oakland's like, we want them, but they don't want to stay here.
They're they
like,
don't want to stay here.
They'll go like, they'll go to their aunt's house, they'll go to their cousin's house, but they don't want to stay here.
I will say that all of these major teams, or I guess professional teams, popping up in Vegas, as obviously as a gambler, is very interesting to me. I was talking to June about this earlier, Kev. ESPN having their own book is annoying the hell out of me because now they start hiding old stats. I can't find old stats as easy. I used to be able to find old stats to correlate trends and shit. I don't appreciate that, man. I can't get pitcher splits, like full pitcher splits. They just give me the overall pitcher split from last year. Now I can't get the home away versus lefties versus righties. I don't appreciate that, ESPN. And now you got all these teams popping up in Vegas with the Golden Knights, and you know, you got the Aces and women's bat in the WNBA now, and you know, maybe 10-15 years we'll have, you know, an MLB team. We don't know when they're gonna get there, but it's very interesting to me. But there is a very big following as far as like fan base in Vegas. I know that they have a very big minor league following. People pop up to those games in the thousands, probably more than people pop up to the Oakland A's game to actually watch and spectate and not be a protester outside within the picket fence line. But it's we're gonna let it develop. As June says, we'll let this develop, and you know, we'll get back to you with more details as they come.
Yeah, get back with more details on the Oakland, Sacramento, Vegas A's
in the Bay Area. Vegas, that's hilarious.
Bay Area A's is crazy.
Ooh, we do have a live NBA game right now. The Denver Nuggets at the Los Angeles Clippers. We're in the third quarter, just about halfway through. The Nuggets are down by 11, 55-66. Jokic has 20 points, 9 rebounds. Paul George, 21 points. I mean, the playoff race shaping up to be very interesting. And if you're a Knicks fan, you probably don't want to be a Knicks fan right now. Julius.
That's funny.
Julius Randle out for the season. June did run into this guy recently, about a week ago in the Upper West Side. Had the big Louis V duffel around the hurt shoulder. Crazy work. A week later, he's having season ending shoulder surgery.
That was funny.
And June on the list of topics today, he put Knicks Heat Part 3. The Heat did come out victorious. June, what's the Heat check looking like this week?
I'll tell you this. We were ranking on the Miami Marlins so bad that we forgot to talk about the other NL East team. And I got to bring it up because the Mets are 0-5. And you got to think about that Family Guy clip where they're like, all right, we're talking about the Mets. Here's the Mets opening day. Oh, the season's over. Yep. And Stewie throws his hat because what the fuck is going on? And what the hell is wrong with the Mets? You know,
they did get one today.
They finally won today? Okay.
Yeah, they won game two. They were actually winning game one. And I thought they were going to win game one.
I saw they lost game one in extras. So
yeah, and then out of nowhere, they lost game one.
Okay, well, guess what? The 1-5 Mets, excuse me, if that makes everything better, the 1-5 Mets still haven't found their stride. It's good to see they did get a win today, but yikes. All right, EP, I do want to catch back up, but couldn't let them off the hook. I definitely had the Mets on my mind. Big hater vibes was going.
You're good, bro. You're
Knicks,
good.
I heard about Julius Randle. He's hurt. I know that he's, you know, out for the season. Catch me up one more time. What's going on?
We're going to go into the Heat check. I just had to set it up.
Okay. Knicks Heat Part 3.
Yeah.
Start facts, right there. Facts. Right. What a game. Shout out to, you know, Miami for putting on and winning a game you needed to win. Terry Rozier going on a tear, actually, in his previous two games to that New York game. You know, he was having a lot of success, scored like 86 points in the last three games. Today, we had Philadelphia on the schedule. Not so friendly. Joel Embiid is back. Didn't make the biggest impact on this game. Tyrese Maxey just, man, if we can't guard a point guard, man,
And we, you know, it was very promising to see the defense we played against Jalen Brunson. The Knicks are in a position where they're clearly not all the way healthy. Jalen Brunson has to play all the minutes in the world and do, you know, 90% of the things for that offense to survive. And he's done a great job doing it. I think he got player of the month. So we'll give him his credit. But did the Heat have him in jail? Did the Heat have him play a sloppy game? They did. And so I want to give credit there to Miami. But tonight, man, Tyrese Maxey, it was can't put our finger on it. I think he has 30 points in the last four games or so versus Miami. And that's before Terry got here. That's after Terry got here. That's with Hayward Highsmith stepping up and playing the great defense he's playing. Nobody could stop him. But that's also a credit to who Maxey is as a player, how he's grown in this league and has found his rhythm. I think that Miami being in the sixth seed right now, I think we held our spot tonight with the loss. Oh, no, we went down to seven. We got, you know, Pacers at six, so we're back in the play-in hunt. And it's not where you want to be. You know, you losing close games like this one versus Philly, I have to question Jimmy Butler and the lack of aggressiveness, you know, tonight specifically, because, you know, Terry Rozier outscored him and Bam together in that game versus the Knicks. And then in a game versus Philadelphia where we felt like this was a bigger game in a sense, you know, we couldn't call on him. Bam also really started this game poorly and had one of the worst first halves of his season so far. He kind of woke things up. Third quarter, we rolled. With 6 minutes and a half left, we were up, you know, a good amount, six or so. And I don't know, we didn't score a bucket for like the last 8 or 9 minutes of the game. So it was a lot. And I'm not going to, you know, hang my head on this one, but we got to figure things out. I think, you know, we're going to have to beat Indiana in Indiana coming up on that schedule. We play the Rockets and the Pacers in a back-to-back. You know, Rockets obviously playing hard basketball for their playoff hopes. They just lost tonight, so they're going to be eager to try to get a win at home versus the Heat on Friday tomorrow. And then, you know, so they're actually on a back-to-back as well, so that'll be our advantage. And then we're going to be on a back-to-back on the road traveling from Houston to Indiana. And then we got, you know, Atlanta, Dallas, and the Raptors twice. So hopefully, you know, we can just find some guts, you know, again. And you know, as EP said, it's not a, no, nobody probably wants to be a Knicks fan right now. But I'm damn proud to be a Heat fan right now.
So. Oh, man. I love any time that we can substitute the word crap into a team's name when they suck. I mean, I know you're a fan of Ovechkin, but the Capitals is one of my favorite ones. Hey. Kev,
have some respect.
I'll kick it over to Kev. What's your thoughts on the playoff outlook?
I mean, you got to win tonight. That's the game you had to have, especially with Philly right there behind you, and you don't want to end up in a situation where you got to play Embiid in the play-in now, because they've been, you know, he's been out and they've kind of fell back into that eight spot. You don't want him to even more jump you for seven, and then you have to go play in Philly and play an Embiid and Maxey led team. So that sixth spot, I think, is where they want to be, and you're probably going to get Cleveland in that situation. And I love the Heat's chances against that Cavs team, especially with Donovan Mitchell probably playing a little bit hampered right now, at least how it seems since the All-Star break. So you had to win tonight, but more importantly, you've got to win next two. Like the Houston game, you've got to win just to set yourself up for that Indiana game, and that Indiana game is a must win. Like that's a game I would like to see Jimmy be a little bit more playoff Jimmy. And I say it every time, I'm not worried. The only time I'll get worried is if we get to the playoffs and I don't see that version of Jimmy Butler, then I don't know what's happening. Really. Like that to me wouldn't, then it would start to not make sense. This is, to me, he's coasting. But at what point do you flip the switch? And hopefully we see that from him. I have no reason to believe we won't. We've seen it for 3 out of the 4 years he's been here. So hopefully we'll get that that gym that flip switched and things will start to pick up once the playoffs start. But would really love to avoid that play-in and just get right down to business in the sixth seed or the fifth seed or the fourth seed.
Real quick, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, Kev, you know, pretty much alluded to a healthy Joel Embiid. I mean, in his two games back, you know, he's averaging 26.5 points, 5 boards. And the key to there and the key to, you know, great star players that down the road and towards the end of the season aren't able to be fully there and fully available. You know, they say the best availability is what they say. And now Kev saying, look, we got a healthy, not we, but you know, the 76ers have a healthy Joel Embiid that they haven't had. They've arguably have never had a healthy Joel Embiid towards the stretch, towards the end of the season. Could this be a scary and a sneaky Sixers team that most teams may not want to see in the East, Kev?
Yeah, like I think if you're Boston, I think Boston's like whatever. We beat them every time we've seen them. But any other team, like I don't think you want to necessarily see Embiid and Maxey in a first round. Like that's not the first round matchup you're looking to get. Like you're used to first round matchups being cakewalks, you know? Like you want the Hawks or the Bulls to come out of that play-in. Like you don't want to see Embiid.
And you see me shaking my head and I don't completely disagree because you know, you do make sense. Obviously there are teams like Orlando as well, right? That I'd rather see. But I don't think it's about rather see. I think it's about, first of all, 2 games back, 26. He does that in his sleep. He could do 26. He could do 28. He's a 35 point whatever per game scorer this year and an MVP candidate had he not gone down. But history says he doesn't shine. He doesn't shine when the lights are brightest and his tires lose tread toward this time of the year. And so with the equation, it gives you a lack of playoff success. He can't get past that second round. And of course, he's not doesn't have a great first round history. Yeah, he does. Philly is a first round win, most times. Not supposedly, but most times. However,
allegedly.
This Philly team is definitely a team to give credit to. You know, Kelly Oubre has found his role and is comfortable and playing really good for them. The Kyle Lowry trade doesn't really make a difference for them. He's playing the same, probably with a little more hustle and energy for his city, but shooting the same numbers as he was in Miami. But it's as far as Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid could take them. Joel Embiid has to get back into shape. 1, 2. I don't say this lightly. I don't say this as a slight or anything. We have to hope that his knee holds up. He looked a little uncomfortable today in the Miami game, and I'm sure it was some fatigue, but it did look a little bit like it had to do with some uncomfortableness. And so, you know, I hope him all the best. I wish him all the best, but Philadelphia is a beatable team, and they've been a beatable team. So you don't even know what Philadelphia you're going to get. You don't know what Joel Embiid you're going to get. Much like to that point of the Knicks, where I did want to give them credit because they did come back today. They were down 20-something points versus the Kings on national TV, and Jalen Brunson won them, gave them boys 35-11. Josh Hart had a bounce-back game, almost had a triple-double and after a horrible performance in Miami. The Knicks, yeah, I just almost kind of lost my train of thought right there. Oh, with the you don't know what you're going to get. You know, Julius Randle, like the news that he goes down is like some Knicks fans felt like the writing was on the wall. Some Knicks fans felt like they were heartbroken today and they didn't understand what was going on, why he didn't take surgery earlier and just come back for the playoffs. And there's a lot, but the history says, Shata Mora, as she pointed out, 17 points a game on 34% shooting. Like, did I think Julius Randle was going to have a better playoffs than last year? Yeah, of course. I mean, he had a great regular season. I think he played way better this year. Came back healthy, you know, finally got his ankle back, started playing really good. But am I going to fear Julius Randle in the playoffs? I would be a little confident that history has more of a chance to repeat itself than him coming back and, you know, becoming this TJ Warren in the bubble version of a playoff player.
I feel like the difference in those two guys is with Randle, I just think the game slows too much in the playoffs for Julius' game. And I think with Embiid, it's just he just gets hurt all the time. Like yeah. Every time playoffs come, he's got something. Like if it's a broken bone in his face or like his knee or something, like there's always something. Yeah. But now he's back. And if he can be back and right now use this as like his preseason to ramp up to get into that game shape for the playoffs, and he can be that 35 point per game guy in the playoffs now, then I think you've got a problem.
Yeah, no, I get your point. And it sucks that, you know, I'm sitting here talking about, like, I hope he can make it, you know, I hope he does, but it's what we know. It's what we know as mm-hmm. Joel Embiid, the player, and the Sixers at this time of the year, they crack. And, you know, if health is with them, yes, I totally agree, Kev. They are something to worry about as far as a lower seeded team due to the fact that they were injured. And now, you know, they do have their star player, MVP type player back in the lineup. I just also, you know, wonder what it means for the rest of the guys. This team is much better with Joel Embiid, right?
And 1,000%.
It's not like a Ja Morant situation where Memphis still wins games without him, but also wins games when he's there. So there's not going to have to be necessarily that mesh issue or like how players are going to find their roles and stuff. I mean, Joel Embiid makes this engine run, but I think there will be some changes, you know, with him coming back into the lineup. And mentally, the Sixers are just going to have to be tough enough to stick to, you know, stick to it.
Yeah. And to your point on Randle, I think the Knicks can, if Anunoby comes back, I think they could still be a team that can compete deep into the playoffs. We saw it last year with Miami. You're missing a volume shooter. You can still make it. If other guys step up and fill in for that guy. And I mean, the Heat were missing Hero last year and made a run to the finals. Like, it's not inconceivable to see that the Knicks could do the same without Randle.
Agreed.
Before we get out of here, June, you want to update us on the latest news with the head coaching situation in Charlotte?
Yeah, they're saying Steve Clifford is going to step down after this year. He's going to move into a front office advisory role, which I think is cool. You know, Steve Clifford is a great coach. He teaches the game of basketball well. He's a fundamentally sound coach. He's going to, you know, do things the right way. But I think he's also tired, man. Like, that Charlotte team is very unserious in a lot of ways. And I don't know that it's necessary. Like, of course, you look to front office, you look to coaching, and you kind of, like, have to point a finger at the grown-up in the room. But I don't know that it's coaching at this point. Like, I think that players just got to really want to buy in. And at the end of the day, you got LaMelo Ball on your team. And with him being the leader of that group, but also being the guy who misses the most time and the guy who is very young. And I don't want to use any, you know, negative type of adjective here. Like, I don't know him personally, and I also don't think he's a bad leader per se. But he doesn't seem to me to be the guy that you need right now leading this locker room, trying to change the trajectory of this franchise for the next 5 to 10 years. I think he can do that with his talent, but it's going to take some more from his character. Like, there's nothing that has been so outspoken from LaMelo Ball that shows me, like, nah, man, he's the person for this job. And to change the trajectory of a franchise as a talented young player, it comes from inside and character as well, you know? So, there's growing to do. They are saying, the Hornets are saying, they probably want to go in the direction of a first-time head coach. They were looking at Chris Quinn from the Heat's coaching staff, coach from the Kings coaching staff, and then also an assistant coach from the Boston Celtics. You know, I wanted to pose this question to Kev, where, them doing this coaching search and moving Steve Clifford into an advisory role, I believe that's good. But my question is, do you think it's better for them to go in the direction of a first-year coach to try to figure this situation out as far as having such young guys and trying to develop talent? Or would it be more ideal to go and find yourself a veteran head coach or maybe a college Jay Wright type of guy who's doing broadcasting now?
I like going with the younger guy in situations, especially where you've got a more of a younger team. I think we're seeing it right now, right, with Clifford. It's not working. Like, he's a veteran coach and he's a well-respected coach in the league, and mm-hmm. it's just not clicking. And so finally, for the first time, I think in the Hornets history, they are trying to do something different and hire younger at their head coach. And hopefully, I saw, you know, the reports on Quinn. I know they're interviewing Denver's assistant as well, along with Sacramento, Boston, and Phoenix's assistant are the first four assistants that they are going to officially and formally, I guess, interview. And then we'll see from there. But selfishly, I hope that Quinn stays in Miami, but also hope, you know, that he is able to get a head coaching job when the team feels that he's the right guy for it. And, you know, I think he can be one of the better coaches in the league in the future. So if Charlotte does go that route, I think they'll have a good guy to bring in some sort of culture and start something there with Steve Clifford being a front office advisor. But I like the move to go younger for sure instead of a vet guy. I think the vet guys are more like we see with Durant. I think he respects more the veteran guys than the younger guy. I think it's tougher to get like younger guys to the same kind of respect that a veteran would get from a Kevin Durant type player. So I like going with the younger guy with the younger roster.
You know, when the Grizzlies, to go back to the Grizzlies real quick, were on that losing streak at the beginning of the year, I know we talked about it on the pod, Vegas had their team total for the year set at 33. And funny enough, if they went out the rest of the season, they will only win 32 games. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this has been your Thursday night Final Four weekend ATS pod preview. As always, I'm your co-host, Small Town EP, joined by Wade Julian, Big Kev Shot It. We're in for a fun weekend, and we'll see you all on Monday. Thank you for tapping in. If you tapped in on the live, thank you so much for spending the night with us. If you're tapping in after affecting all your streaming platforms, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day. Once again, we'll see you Monday. Peace.